All right. Well, I don't want to spend a whole ton of time talking because you guys have a lot of great stuff to hear tonight. So, first of all, I just want to thank everybody who's involved. Everybody who's here, everybody who made this happen, that's the shorthand. Thank you all. This is going to be a fun night. My involvement with Pittsburgh Poetry Exchange is, I mean, I went to my first workshop when I was 14 years old. My ninth grade English teacher brought me to my first Pittsburgh Poetry Exchange workshop above City Books in 1991, I think. So, yeah. I took a long hiatus. Life happened, and I think it was 2002 when I showed up again, and you guys remembered me and welcomed me back into the fold immediately, and I've never left. So there you are. It's been around a long time. Oh, and the other thing is, it's an open workshop. So any of you guys in this room or anybody anywhere can become part of Pittsburgh Poetry Exchange if you want. It's at the Brentwood Library, first Monday of every month at 7 p.m. So it's open to everybody. You guys could be up here next year. Okay, I'm going to start with a poem in honor of Michael Worcester called Freelance Editor. The old master told his class that when I was young, I would sneak out the window down the side of my parents' house with bedsheets tied together. He did teach me back then, but I wasn't creative enough for any exit except the door. We both knew he made up the story, but I still believe he thought it was true. I'm not protecting the old master's fantasy. I prefer his version of my life, the whole of which he hasn't told. He visits my third floor walk-up with a stack of manuscript pages. I sit across the table and sip tea, wondering what he thinks of my carpeted kitchen, my ridiculous divorce. Without comment, he writes a check. After the folly. You bristled when I saw this coming. Could be true I fashioned our downfall by fearing it. Your shape lay behind the veil I wished to push aside. I had to touch and find you cold, but I did not fail in that I found you. The way I carried you like a dead twin, the weight of your head, the bones in your fingers, and the map etched in their skin, those I gained for a few years while it dawned on us that we could not converse the way you prayed to God. The same way I hope some being knows everything and still loves me. Except I don't believe it. How you hated the questions I asked. Now, when I dream of you, we are next-door neighbors waving from porches, and sometimes on the other side of a wall, I hear running water, a thump, a laugh track. All right, now I'm going to divert from my stack of papers for a second and read you a couple from my very old chapbook, which is hopefully just my first chapbook, but it's been 10 years since I've, and actually Pittsburgh Poetry Exchange published this, I should mention, and now, 10 years later, I'm almost out of the first printing, so I'm sorry to say I don't have any copies to sell, but it's like a rare collector's item now, but okay, so I'm going to read a, and you can see I have all, there's so many, everything's marked, so it's basically like I didn't mark anything. Okay, Over the Coals. Favorite doll in tiara gown, cinder sack. I wear only poise and costumes, and all that keeps villagers kind is grime on my face, missing fingernails. No hailing with spit and stones, they don't convene their own trial. Justice bearing water jugs barefoot through town, sorting spilled millet on hands and knees, sleeping pillowed on fireplace ashes, hair artfully fanned. A heroine's job, or no story's fair. Birds retribution sent to peck jealous eyes, glass stilettos slice off bulbous heels before my sisters take one step against a mile. And you, Prince, are you my reward? What do I get, in truth? Rolled up map in a cave, tied with Birdcage Key, entitling Holder to one fire walk with God, to feel his gaze, humid cloak, you have it in you, I put it there, to know he's pulling, rooting for happily ever after on the other side, even as he slows my feet, as he whitens the heat. Going back to high school, if I can find it. Oh boy. There we go. The Great Red Spot. Mr. Simon tells his science class, Jupiter has twice the mass of all other planets in the solar system combined. And if the sun were this classroom, Jupiter would be a baseball, Earth would be a pea. He dismisses the kids in a shower of gum cracking. They stampede for the door. At home, he calls his daughter at her mother's, watches Crossfire, mixes a drink. Just a germ on a pea in a soup ocean, Mr. Simon retires across his bed, atop a bundle of sheets, mind twitching in spiral black gnat ether undreams. But Gabe had been listening, the kid they call Dandruff for scattered stars on the black lab table. Gabe unravels his brain around gas planet factoids the entire bus ride home. The diameter crashes into him, not to mention the distance to that white fleck in the sky. In his bathroom, Gabe surveys the great red spot on his forehead, 300-year Armageddon, vast enough for two worlds and everything in them, peas in a pod, a pupil in the eye of Jupiter. Thanks. Back to the... Well, this isn't that new either, but this is actually in the spring 2016 issue of Main Street Rag. Last time I read this, I said, I don't know when this is coming out, but as it turns out, it came out. and since I moved so many times, they sent it to the wrong address. So I heard about it by people saying, oh, your poem's great, Main Street Rag. And I was like, oh, okay, I guess that means it's out. So I got my copy, though. And this, I should mention, this is a bit of a hat tip to Jan Beatty. She wrote a poem called Zen of Tipping, and this is my psychedelic take on it. Zen of Tripping. My friend Chad gave me a tab, and we cut across the soccer field. It wasn't so different, except I could see, beneath my bare feet and the close-cropped grass, a carpet of crisscrossed threads of what Earth is made from. We're all standing on a giant ball of rubber bands. Chad knew the code to an office building, so we wandered bright, empty halls. The wallpaper's relentless plaid swelled into me, and we retreated to the elevator without trying any doors. My parents were sleeping when I snuck in, slept while I stood at the kitchen window staring down my fiery reflection. By dawn, with help from the low buzz of home shopping TV, I won. Not by knowing the demon wasn't real, but knowing it was real to anyone tripping. I'm going to read you guys a brand new one. And I'm just, I know Michael gasps because I don't do this. I mean, I work on these poems for like decades. And like the people at Pittsburgh Poetry Exchange Workshop are probably sick of them because I'll bring them in like two or three different times and I've changed like two words and I moved a comma. But this one is brand new. I haven't even workshopped it yet. So there you go. I'm branching out. And I'm not even going to explain it. If you get it, you get it. That's great. It's called No Face. Being a monster brings me no joy. It's just that I so enjoy the exact things which turn me into a monster. Can you spare a room in your cottage far off the waterlogged tracks that lead to the haunted palace? Or a chair is enough. A simple place with simpler tasks and fewer spirits to desire or eat whole. and you, my relentless, merciful teacher. As long as I stay in this cottage weaving sparkly ribbons, I can be okay. Still a monster, I know. A harmless monster who tries to be good. I know I'm not strong enough to stay harmless near plates piled high, gold-filled purses, the clamoring crowds. If you send me away, I may find myself treading those tracks and the wreckage beneath. No harm will come to your house. And I'm going to close with the last one that got stuck in here. This is the last one, and I decided to read this here because this is something I did biking. I biked home from this reading last year. So, I mean, I kind of wrote this based on, you know, my little experience that I had last year after this reading. So this is called Keyhole. It's my prerogative, while dumb and still young, to pull off dangerous feats such as biking the park trail at night, luxuriating in the new absence of a worrier at home. I see you, I tell a man's blur of plaid shorts as I slow, and I think it's the most comfort one human can give another. Albino trees in my wavering beam, I keep that keyhole on the path as best I can. I encounter only a cat-sized, seemingly three-legged shape chimping across the gravel far ahead, far enough to leave off my brake. It has been an unaccountably hard day that found me compelled to read those last emails, sifting for insight. How could it happen? Why am I glad? So far, I choose the adventures I'll survive. Thanks.